Welcome back to Biff, a podcast where we discuss superhero TV, movies, and other things. My name is Dan Morin, and it's a dynamic duo for you this week. For joining me is none other than the boy wonder himself, Sean Moltz. Hi, John.
I was kind of hoping that I would be the boy wonder.
Those shorts look great on you, by the way.
Man, they ride up.
Well, we're it's just the two of us. The third member of our trio is off on an island, doing those island things, running, jumping, avoiding arrows, the huge.
Right. Blowing up the island.
You can't leave them alone for a minute. That's kind of how I feel about it. So we don't have a specific show on the air right now. We've got a few weeks, I think about a month before Arrow comes back, at which point we shall return to our regularly scheduled recaps of that show. But since John and I are here, and John has recently finished the third season of Jessica Jones on Netflix, we decided we would spend some time discussing that, since I don't think we ever really got to do a breakdown of it previously.
Correct.
And so you have been warned there will be some spoilers in this discussion, but it's been out for, 3 months or something.
Months.
So,
yeah. What was it? June? It came
it
out
was June. Yeah. So, yeah. You know what? Spoiler limit is over.
Exactly.
We're going to launch in that, for our main thing. Then maybe we'll discuss, do a little bit of superhero sweep and maybe some letters if we got time, and we'll wrap this up in short order. So if you don't want to hear anything about Jessica Jones season 3, please skip forward now.
Who knows how far forward?
I don't know. Yes. Far, far forward in the future. All right. So Jessica Jones season 3. Jessica Jones season 1, I think most people would admit, was one of Netflix's best of the collaborations with Marvel. I think a lot of people felt let down by season 2.
I was trying to remember which the seasons were. The first is Kilgrave, obviously.
Yep. The second one is her mom.
And the second one was her mom, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And I think a lot of the sophomore seasons of the Netflix shows were underwhelming, right? Like,
yeah.
Luke Cage,
well,
I think.
Iron Fist is the only one that got, you know,
that's right.
Substantially
better. That's right.
Even, but it was, you know, it was coming up from so far down that it was hard to judge.
Yeah, yeah. Daredevil, I think, took a bit of a dip in second season, although its third season is tremendous.
Yeah.
I would say probably the best. Yeah, that and the first season of Daredevil are up there as the best.
I think the third one's the best.
I would agree. I think it's the strongest.
Yeah.
I really loved a lot about Luke Cage, but it's the back half of its first season fell kind of flat, and its second season, despite the fact I actually really enjoyed the villain in the second season.
Yeah, I did too.
There's something about the structure and pacing. It suffered from that 13 episode problem.
Well, that's the thing. They almost all of them do. I mean, Daredevil season 3 may be the only one. I mean, even season 1 maybe. But even the Defenders at 8 episodes seemed a little long.
Yeah, which is funny because it's like the terribleness expands to fit the room available for it.
So yeah, we keep saying that maybe they should knock a few episodes off. Maybe that wouldn't fix it.
Yeah. Well, this is also the last of the Marvel Netflix season collaborations. Mm-hmm.
My wife was very upset to find that out. She said, is there another season after this? After we were finished watching last night? And I said, no. There is not going to be another season. There aren't going to be any more seasons of any of them.
And it will probably be a while before we see any of these characters again.
Yeah.
Just based on, I think there are
most
some
likely
licensing agreements and stuff. Yeah. But, you know,
recast.
Yeah, it's a shame because so many of the castings were among the best parts.
Yeah.
So a shame to see that go, but I'm glad they got out of it what they could. All right, so let's talk a little bit about this season. This one's a little different, I think, than the last two. And I think I really enjoyed, for me, we talked about this in some previous weeks, I think even last week too, a good villain or antagonist can make or break a season.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually really enjoyed the villain in this season, Jesse
I think
Jones.
He was pretty solid. I mean, he was definitely someone that you could enjoy hating.
Right.
and sort of different, you know, not someone who was super powered.
Right. And I think that plays to strengths here because it's the one, this, a lot of the season's about vulnerability. And the big thing for Jessica is this is a problem that at least she literally cannot beat to death, right? Like she can't win it by being stronger physically. Mm-hmm. Cause yeah. It's, you know, A, she, you know, first of all, she is vulnerable. Like the end of the first episode, she gets stabbed. And as people point out, like, you're strong and you probably heal better than your average person, but you don't have a spleen. So that's still a problem.
Yeah, right.
And she's trying to sort of do things in a more heroic way. A lot of this season is about grappling with what it means to be a hero. And so she's not just like, I'm going to, you know, Batman style, tie a rope to this guy and throw him over the nearest lamppost.
Yeah.
She actually has to try to do things right and outsmart this guy. And her antagonist is a challenge because he is very smart.
Yep.
So,
and a jerk.
And a real jerk. And a real jerk. But I enjoyed the verbal fencing and I enjoy watching her get put out of her, put out of her element.
Yeah. And she, and this one, well, I guess Kilgrave is the bad guy through the whole first season, right? I mean, because a lot of these Netflix ones, there was like a bad guy in the first half and then a different bad guy in the second half. And
right.
This one was a little bit different because there's a bad guy through 12 episodes, basically, and then a sort of surprise bad guy at the last episode.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of times they also do things where it's like a... Let's start out with a, like, introduce our villain and then let's take a break.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's get back to it for the ending run.
Yeah.
Right. And they do a little bit of that, you know, this time, because it's really a few episodes before we learn who the actual villain is this time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, a lot of this more is like we've got a few episodes of the, you know, a lot of it is setting up Jess and setting up Trish. And then we go more into the whole, like, all right, here's our main bad guy, and here's what his deal is.
Yeah. And the burn on him is pretty good, I think.
I still think,
you know, this could have been cut a bit as well.
Sure.
As,
yeah.
But I think his reveal and then... There's not a lot of, you know, flash. There's a little bit of that, I guess. There's a little bit of flash prisoner taking, but flash style prisoner taking, but hostage taking. But it all works pretty well.
Yeah. I think the sort of the biggest element that is probably the most divisive element also is Trish. And her character progression. I know a lot of people who are really angry about her character this season. For reasons I can kind of see, right? Like,
yeah,
there is a lot of... So my only exposure to the character of Hellcat in the comic books is the recent Kate Leth run, which is a...
like, oh, yeah.
180 degree tone.
I think that's my pretty much my only... I mean, I think maybe I had seen her years and years ago in some team-up thing. But yeah, that's the only dedicated book for her that I've read either. So,
and
it's more of a comedy. I mean, it's more lighthearted,
yeah, right,
and
exactly.
Harkens back to her origins, really.
Right. And it's a little bit, it's almost more Squirrel Girl-ish than anything.
Yeah.
Right. A little less, absurd, but you know, very, very funny. And this is like a 180 degree take on that character.
Right.
And I understand the frustration. I mean, so many shows, you know, they want to get conflict, they want to get drama in, they do that by pitting their characters against each other. And especially since the Trish-Jess relationship was the core of the first season and most of the second season, up to a point, that all gets kind of yanked away here. And I do think the show suffers for it a bit, just because so much of it gets rehashed along the way, just continuously, right? Like, that's one of the problems with a 13 episode season or a longer season is like you got to use it well. You can't just hit the same beats over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this season is like, I'm pissed because you killed my mom. But I'm a hero. I know how to do things, and you can't. You know, if you don't want to do them, I can do them for you. But I'm pissed because you killed my. And it's like that for you know, little, easily half the season.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, and I wonder if they, how much of this story was planned out before they knew that this was going to be the last.
I don't think very much at all. I think this season was mostly done, perhaps.
Done before they made that decision?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I was wondering if maybe there was another arc that they had for Trish after this that we'll never see.
True. Very possible.
Where she, you know, she gets sent, I mean, because basically she's getting sent to the raft at the end.
Right.
And she could very well, like, sign the Sokovia Accords or whatever and then come back, you know, having been, you know, being now used by the government.
Sure. Yeah. There's definitely room there, but it's also, it feels like verging into territory that these shows never really wanted to get into.
Right. Right. Well, I think there is a little bit of room there, though. I mean, they mentioned, you know, Luke shows up at his brief appearance, which I wish had been longer, but he mentions having sent his brother to the raft.
Right.
And so it's a thing that exists. And I don't think they would tie it into S.H.I.E.L.D. or tie it into the Avengers or anything. But I think they could have had some sort of, I mean, because they had Nuke in.
Right. Right.
Preview which show was that?
That was this season for our first season of Jessica Jones.
Oh, that's right. But then he dies.
He dies. He dies in second season.
He dies. Yeah. He gets killed by her mother. Yeah. There is that sort of shady quasi government group that's running around trying to make superpowered people.
Right. Right.
And I think there could have been room for some of them to, you know, sort of manipulate her or, you know, take charge of her and then have her be a foil for the fourth season, but it's not going to happen, obviously.
We'll never know.
That's right.
There are some other major character storylines in this season, both returning and new characters. Just to, like, cover a returning character for a moment, she gets a lot of time this season. What do you think about Hogarth's arc in this season?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I think I kind of expected it to be, I mean, I guess you know how it's going to turn out, but I thought that it would be more final. Mm. I thought that she would die by the end of the season.
Right, right.
One way or the other, whether she was killed by somebody or succumbed to her disease, although it never really wasn't quite set up for that. So it probably would have had to have been killed by somebody. But I thought maybe, you know, they seemed at one, you know, one brief moment that was what was going to happen.
Right.
But it was interesting, and it sets up a lot of other stuff. It interplays well, I think, with Malcolm's decision making process and stuff that affects Trish as well. So,
yeah,
as far as it works into the rest of the story, I think it's pretty good.
See, I actually come down the other side. Like, it definitely worked in a lot, but I felt like at times it seemed like the whole thing with her former lover, it felt kind of like a different show. Right. Oh, it's The Good Wife or something in Netflix Marvel land. And I love Carrie Ann Moss in that role.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess part of me also wanted a little more of a, not quite a comeuppance or a change of heart. I mean, you get a little bit of that, but it's hard to root for her as a character, certainly.
And I don't think she's there for that.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's the thing. I mean, I think she is not really someone that you're supposed to be rooting for.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because she's not really that great a person.
No, she isn't.
She's not the worst, but she's, you know, and she's valuable in that position because she kind of ties things together because she can work both sides.
Right, right. Let's see. We've also got Malcolm, who you mentioned, who I actually enjoyed his arc a lot, although I wanted it to happen faster. I think, again, that's sort of my complaint with a lot of these things is like,
yeah,
I enjoyed him feeling like struggling with the job that he is doing, which is essentially cleaning up messes for Hogarth's very rich clients. And then I enjoyed his, like, this is like tearing me apart inside, so I'm going to sort of take the law into my own hands. Like the scene where he gets into the drives the car into the drunk driver that he's helped clean up his mess.
We watched this over a number of weeks, so I'm trying to remember.
and I watched it basically all within a week or two of it coming out, so I'm sort of like refreshing my memory.
Right.
But yeah, that's
because I had like kind of forgotten that part.
Right. Well, there's a whole long thing. And first of all, I think Eka Darville, if that's how you pronounce his name, who plays that character, I love him. He's one of my favorite actors throughout this entire series.
Yeah.
Because he just manages to play so many different sides. That first, right. Yeah, first, I mean,
when you
season,
think about where he started out and where he is now,
it's just kind of bananas. Yeah,
he's just this strung out. He's strung out because Kilgrave has screwed him up so badly. And then he's still screwed up, you know, in many ways, but he's also, you know, much more of a functioning member of quote society unquote.
Right. Yeah. And I enjoy that he sort of comes around and ends up back in the fold. But yeah, there's a lot of interpersonal conflict in a lot of these seasons that it's just like people with strong egos butting heads against each other. And I, again, as I said before, I understand the drama, but like some of it just gets so frustrating and tiring to watch. As like it's just like, guys, just put aside your differences and just deal with it, right? Like,
yeah,
be adults.
Yeah, that, which is, you know, a continued refrain of ours.
Right.
But we rarely get what we want.
So true.
The other character I really liked was the assistant whose name I'd never written I'm sure I ever even learned. But the sarcastic assistant who was great.
Was it Jillian? I liked her a lot. I thought she was fantastic. She was also such a good character to have as a foil for Jessica because, as they sort of point out early on, like she's like just willing to take a lot of her crap.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not an easy thing to do. So it's a very different type of character than I think anybody we've seen in the show before.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I would guess so. I'm trying to think of it. Yeah. I mean, she's just she's there. She'll do the job. And then but then when it's like 5 o'clock, she's out of there.
Sure. I respect that. Superheroing,
yeah, completely.
Man. Yeah, you know what?
Completely.
It can take over your life.
Good work-life balance.
We've also got a return from Trish's mom, who is Dorothy Walker, who I liked better in this season than previous seasons. And of course, that's all because they can set up her, you know, eventual murder at the hands of Salinger.
Yeah, which I sort of saw coming because it was like she's being so good in that like that episode leading up to what happens, and it's like,
nope, she's gone.
That can't be good for her.
Yeah, it's always a bummer when that happens, right? When characters just sort of like, oh, they're turning a corner, they're redeeming themselves. No, you can't redeem yourself, you are murdered. Like,
yeah,
that is
yeah.
kind of a trope. I don't know if there's a good there, I'm sure TV Tropes has a name for it, but like there is the sort of you're turning the corner and then you get murdered, because in some ways you don't want to have to deal with like, well, this person's now a good guy, but they have to, shouldn't they have to answer for all the terrible things they did, right? Like, or do we just wipe the slate clean? That's always the problem with like when you have like bad guys team up with good guys, for example. I feel like the best, you know, the one that got away with that was kind of Slade on Arrow, which is like, you know, he was one of the few bad guys that Oliver didn't just dispatch. And Malcolm to a certain extent as well, but like Malcolm, I think there was always much more of a divisiveness over like, well, should we trust him at all, whereas like you know, Slade, I feel like he's like, well, he's, you know, he's an honorable man, even if he was occasionally psychopathic.
Yeah, well, he was affected by, you know, a psychotropic drug, so he had a decent excuse, I guess.
Yeah, fine.
Which Malcolm never did.
Doctor's note.
Yeah, right. It's a thing that happens.
What about so we also have a new character.
One thing about her mother though, I thought they did a terrific job, and I don't know if they did any, it didn't look like they were using any sort of computer assistance in order to make her look younger in the flashback scenes, but it worked really well. And I think a lot of it was just her hairstyle and how it looked almost exactly like her hairstyle from Risky Business.
Right. Right. Rebecca De Mornay doing a nice job. Yeah. I thought she does a great job in that character.
I think so too.
It's such an interesting and complicated dynamic, and so much of this show is complicated. About there's a mother daughter angle running through it, obviously, especially last season. So much of that is an interesting another dynamic that doesn't get played out a lot in superhero dramas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of nice to see that, like, instead of there are so many, superheroes with dad issues, right? Like literally all of them. You go through like the Marvel thing. I was thinking about this and I was like, almost all the Avengers have some sort of dad issue.
Yeah. I mean, Tony's got it the worst, obviously. Yeah, but
Tony, yeah. Thor. Thor's got a lot of dad issue.
Yeah.
There are a ton, but
depending on your banner, your banner origin, he also has them.
True. Black Panther. T'Challa's got some. I mean, a little different, but he's got some. It's either that or you don't have a dad, right? Like your dad is just basically totally absent. So I think it's nice to have a mother daughter dynamic instead and just get a different perspective. So I think they did a pretty good job on that.
Yeah. And she's there.
Right.
And
right.
She's just overbearing
and historically abusive, I guess.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
We've also got a new character in the form of Eric Gelden, who shows up fairly early, and we learn is has a power of his own, which is he gets headaches when he's around people who are basically evil.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting power. I think the powered take in the Marvel Netflix universe, I think they try to do, I think they end up doing more interesting things. Because when you need to work on a smaller scale, you can't have people running around who are, the Hulk. You can't have people running around who are even like Captain America or Iron Man, right? Like,
right.
So you end up with characters who have these much smaller scale powers, and you get the idea like, oh man, there's probably a ton of these people running around with just these really bizarre powers that are not necessarily things that would get you recruited by the Avengers. I like that. And I wasn't sure about him for a long time, right? Like, he's very charming.
You weren't sure about his motivations?
Yes, and like, is he a good guy or a bad guy? Like, is he working with the bad guy, Salinger? Is he angle?
I thought he was the guy that stabbed her. Oh, no, he was in the apartment, though.
Yes.
But I thought he was somehow working with whoever stabbed her.
I agree. I was very, very suspicious of him for a long, like all the way up to the end, basically, because it kept looking like one of those things where you're like, are they going to do it? Are they going to flip a switch? And it turns out he was actually super involved in all this. And of course he wasn't really like he's
and his sister. I mean, I thought somehow she was going to be bad as well. And possibly powered somehow that we didn't know, but turns out she's just, she's just messed up.
So I guess he is based on a Marvel character, as are so many of these characters. Mindwave, who I never heard of,
I tried looking him up, but it didn't get anything.
It looks like he was a Daredevil villain initially.
Okay.
This is all right. I am not a Daredevil like aficionado, so I don't have like a deep catalog knowledge. But this is my favorite definition ever. Which is, Mindwave was a megalomaniac criminal possessing mental abilities heightened by his own inventions. He robbed banks in Europe and America until stopped by Daredevil and Yuri Geller.
sure, why not?
Cool. All right. Did like Yuri Geller like bend some spoons at him, or what? What happened there?
Oh, this is weird. I mean, I find him under Mindwave, but I looked up his name and couldn't find anything. Although I was looking on my little tiny phone, so maybe that was it.
I'll do it. I'll do it every time.
I thought it was interesting that they never really explained how he got his powers.
I was okay with it. Like,
it was fine. It was perfectly fine. But I just thought it was But I thought it was, I thought the choice to just decide not to was what was interesting.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that works better in the case of the, like, because A, there's not going to be like a really satisfying answer. Mm-hmm. And B, yeah, like, you kind of, you know, three seasons in, you're bought in on the idea that, like, there are people with powers.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of them have really sensible origin stories, and some of them just don't. And it's like, this is fine. I'd rather we don't spend a lot of time necessarily going into all of his origin story. I really liked the actor. Benjamin Walker, who has been... perhaps best known, I think it says, as he was the title role in the 2012 Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Isn't that right?
Indeed. And he also played Andrew Jackson in the musical Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. So
he's got a type.
He does, apparently. Yeah, former president gone bad.
Typecast again, I guess.
I liked him a lot. I thought he did a great job of that, you know, somewhat shady character with a lot of charm, which is just goes a long way on that character, right? Like, he's a mm-hmm. con artist, not quite con artist, but he's a shakedown artist. Shakedown
right.
artist.
Right, right.
I really...
Yeah, he's only shaking down bad people.
Oh, and that makes it okay.
Well, it's better. It's definitely better.
Well, it's interesting because they bring up this whole point, you know, Trish, I think, mentioned it too, is like, essentially now you have like this infallible radar that lets you know when people are good and bad. Mm-hmm. But like it does still link into that whole question of, you know, do your ends justify your means, which is the journey that both Jess and Trish take this season, which is like, well, we've identified somebody who's bad. Can we just as heroes / vigilantes just sort of take the law into our own hands and deal with them? And it really doesn't go well for the most part, I feel like.
Yeah. Not so much. Yeah. It's interesting thinking about the fact that she killed Kilgrave.
Right. Right.
And then now I think I can understand it. His power was simply too much.
There was,
too
no
bad a person
way
to contain it.
Right. She tries to redeem him, right?
Yeah. Like,
and it just is never going to work. He is irredeemable. And I think the same could be said for Salinger in this one, right? Like, he has no remorse. He feels no guilt. He is a sociopath. And mm-hmm. he's just going to kill people because he wants to be able to kill people and get away with it.
Right.
So there really wasn't, you know, and he's an unpowered character, and still perhaps one of the higher body counts among a lot of the different villains, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think it was it's an interesting theme for a season, and I feel like it ends in a place that is more, aside from Trish's situation, mostly hopeful and more optimistic, but it is certainly not the cheery optimism of most of the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And we get there's a brief appearance by the super.
Oh yeah, Oscar
from last season at the beginning, to sort of like put a pin in that, right?
Yeah, I think that was a shame because I liked him a lot, and I liked his story.
I liked, I liked his kid, and I liked him, and but you know, I mean, and then Luke shows up later, and I really wished, I mean, because in the comic books they end up together, of course, and I think they're great together in the comic books. Yeah. I mean, I think it's one of the best things that Marvel has done, and I wish that they had
gone in that direction,
and you know, I mean, maybe they again would have if they had the opportunity, but didn't get there.
It's a weird situation too, because you know, Luke shows up at the end, and where we left him at the end of his season two was kind of dark, right? Like, and there's some allusion to it here, but it's not Luke's show, so we're not going into Luke's deal.
Yeah.
But I think that was kind of a bummer, because like that one, to me, that one felt much more of a loose end than many of the other shows, because you know, they clearly ended in a down spot to give, probably if there had been a season three there, it would have kind of, you know, had to show him struggling to redeem himself to a certain extent, or dealing with his sort of situation in the community now. And I really didn't love where they ended that season with him, because I really love Luke Cage.
Yeah.
And they basically turned him into a bad guy, or alluded to the fact that he was, you know, going down that path. And I really got, I'm annoyed with that.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's great to see him here, just because Mike Coulter as Luke Cage is a fantastic actor playing a really fun character.
Yeah, one of the really good castings that they did.
But yeah, it's a serious bummer that that's where his story ended.
Well, I mean, now he looks, you know, like he's in a, hopefully a better place, maybe.
I guess. I don't know.
I mean, because he shows up and, you know, basically tells her that she has to solve this problem, because it's becoming a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not like he doesn't care about what's going on.
Right. Right. Well, and that's confusing, too, because of the fact that it feels like there is a gap in what we know about his character in these shows. But
yeah.
Yeah, well, I hope that there is a... I hope someday they get back and do another take on Luke Cage in some variety.
Yeah, well, you know, given the linear nature of time, I think they will.
You're saying
time is infinite, Dan.
What? Well, not for
and
all
so
of
are
us.
The pockets. So are the pockets of Disney Marvel.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any other overarching thoughts about this season?
It was good. Not as good as the first season, but better than the second season. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and overall, I'm disappointed that they're not continuing these series, but hopefully, like you mentioned, we'll get to see them in some other form again.
Well, you know, Marvel's certainly always digging in to find all the characters it can monetize or bring to the screen in some way.
There's gold in them there hills.
Yeah.
So I think they
need enough time now to, they don't want to pull like a Spider-Man where like Sony just kept trying to redo the same character over and over again. So, you know, need a little time to breathe and reintroduce these characters to both the people who have watched all these, as well as to new, you know, new audiences who don't want to feel like, oh man, I didn't watch those Netflix shows. Am I going to be totally lost here?
Yeah.
So, well, an interesting experiment for Netflix.
Yes. There's our golf clap.
Well, that's an interesting point to sort of veer into briefly, the Spider-Man discussion, which we didn't really talk about as much last week, with the whole Spider-Man Sony versus Disney thing, because my opinion on that is, it, you know, obviously there's a lot of money and ego at play there, and I can kind of understand the perspectives of both of these players in this situation, but there is also like a little bit of the Sony feeling like, you know, well, you guys kind of gave us the push we needed, we're good now, thanks, see you later.
Yeah.
That feels a little bit dickish.
I mean, yeah, monetarily, you can understand their position, I guess, because they're going to make more money. I mean, if it's, you know, on a purely spreadsheet basis, they're probably going to make more money doing it off by themselves than they are, you know, if Disney is insisting on taking 50%, which is what the sort of rumor.
Which is also ridiculous, so I don't want to cut Disney too much slack there.
Right, exactly. So you mean from a purely, it's just you wish you could go back in time and change the things that Marvel did back in the 90s, because
selling off all his characters. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's terrible for fans, and you know, you want somebody to blink, you know, cause it doesn't matter to us.
Right. Like, right.
If one or the other overpays, I don't care.
Right.
It doesn't affect me in the slightest.
You're still paying the same amount for your movie tickets.
Right. And now I'm getting like a subpar experience because he's not going to be in the universe with everybody else, basically.
Well, and because the first two movies are so tied to the MCU, right, it just seems such an odd choice. I mean, I understand, again, monetarily, business wise, I understand what they're doing it. But like, it's hard to look at that and not be like, man, Marvel really bailed you guys out. And made, because you're coming off the backs of two not great Spider-Man movies, which looked worse by the virtue of being held up against the MCU movies. It seems like a bad business decision to be like, we think we got it now, and to like go your own way again when you're still going to be you are still going to be held up against all the Marvel movies that you're playing against. I don't know, it seems like a lose for fans, but I agree. Right. But I, you know, the people also making the arguments that it gives a chance to be a little bit more of a Spider-Man story as opposed to a dependent on the MCU story. I don't know. I think you probably, that's just a choice you make. Like, you could have done that within the confines of the MCU.
Yeah.
So.
I don't consider this not a Spider, you know, the most recent movie, not a Spider-Man story.
Right.
Or the first one, not a Spider-Man story. They're Spider-Man stories, and it's just they have characters that are from the other movies. It's not it's not a Spider-Man story.
Yeah, well, I know people got annoyed with the Far From Home. I love Far From Home, but I know people got... some people were frustrated by the fact that a lot of Peter's story is about stepping into Tony's shoes, and the Spider-Man, the take on Peter Parker / Spider-Man that we get in Far From Home is, you know, very much not your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. It's someone who is sort of like, you know, the successor to Tony Stark. And that it feels less Spider-Man-y, perhaps. I get it. Like, I understand that. But it's also still a really good movie.
Right. And that, I think that evolution, I mean, that evolution does happen in the comic books.
True.
At least, you know, of course, everything goes back and forth. But it did happen at least... for a while in the comic books.
I'm interested with where they're still going with a third movie, just because of the way that movie ends. And like, I, you know, they're still going to make more, right? These two movies have done exceptionally good business for Sony. They're not pulling the plug of their relationship with Disney so that they don't make movies.
Yeah. Well, and if they don't make movies, they would, the rights would lapse back to Marvel. So that's not what they want.
Yeah. And certainly they have shown the ability to make a good Spider-Man movie without Marvel's direct assistance with the Spider-Verse, which is a great movie.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of that goes to having talented filmmakers and not interfering with them, basically, right? Like,
yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, they could make a good movie. I'm not convinced that they will, but it's possible. I mean, I think their track record is it's about 50%. Right, the first, yeah, because you could, how many have they made? They've made the first three, and then I mean, if you take out the ones that Marvel was involved in, and then they made, well, I guess Marvel. I don't know how much Marvel was involved in the other ones, but they weren't as directly involved as they were.
No,
in
the Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield movies are, I think, not, you know, Marvel. They just had the license of the character and whatever sign off that meant. Marvel gets its name on it, but it's not like it was being produced by Marvel.
Yeah. And Spider-Verse was not produced by Marvel.
Right.
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 So, I would say the first two Tobey Maguire movies are good. And then the Spider-Verse movie is good.
Yeah. Yep.
And there were six total. So it's like 50%.
50-50.
Actually, that's exactly 50.
Exactly. 50. Yeah, our math is brought to you today by...
Right. We have just awed the spreadsheet people at Sony.
Yeah. Whoa. 50%. Do we have any other superhero things that you want to discuss?
As far as that goes, I mean, I suppose there's still time for them to fix it. They seem to be saying they're not going to fix it.
I mean, negotiations are negotiations.
Right.
Sooner or later, if someone wants to cave, then they will fix
it. I mean, I suppose there's still a possibility, but given what we know now, they're going ahead without each other.
Yeah, and I don't think there was a... another one on the books, certainly, or at least there hasn't been anything publicly announced about another Spider-Man movie right now. So who knows where that's going?
Yeah. I think they just, you know, they take everywhere where they had Spider-Man written into the Marvel movies, they just write in Shuri.
Right, right. I'm okay with that. It's totally fine.
Just search and replace.
No complaints. Yeah, and we talked a little bit about the MCU lineup, but even that's pretty, it's interesting that there's a movie coming out in like 6 months that we don't know anything about.
Yeah, I know. And I've not heard that it's started shooting yet, has it?
What, the Black Widow?
Yeah.
No, it's done, I think.
Oh, it's done?
Yeah. They did show footage at D23, it just hasn't been made public.
Okay. I was like, yeah, I'm not following the right accounts.
Yeah, I believe it is well past.
Because I would think it would have to be.
Right. Yes. No. There's some stuff was shown off at one of the conferences. I don't think any of that has been made public yet. Okay. And of course has a cast and everything.
It will tomorrow morning before the show goes out.
That's exactly what will happen, I'm sure. Yeah, it comes out on May 1st, so a little longer than 9 months. 6 months. It's but not that 8 months. 8 months away. That's feel like that's the next thing in the lineup, and it's been very quiet. Like that's why we talk about things like Spider-Man, Sony and Marvel negotiations, because there's not a lot of other buzz to talk about right now.
Do we have questions or not?
We have questions. I don't know. I've got some deep in the mailbag, okay, which I'm going to pull out here. We'll do all a right. couple. All right. So, John, this is from reader Daniel. Not me, but reader Daniel.
Yeah. Okay. Good to know that you're not writing these questions.
I'm writing these questions. And I'm being very transparent about it. Do you have a favorite superhero video game?
Oh. Gosh, a favorite superhero video game.
Do you need me to repeat?
Well, I haven't gotten that far in. I need to get further into the Spider-Man game. I think that is very good, and I have only for some reason, I haven't gotten to the point where I'm like hooked on it and need to like play it constantly. But Hank and I have played the Lego Marvel stuff for a long time. And I think the first Lego Avengers one had so many great sort of in jokes in it, because some of the side quests is a thing where you go and you're on the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier and you talk to one of the S.H.I.E.L.D. characters and they say, you know, can you help me get the helicarrier is infested with snakes. And Director Fury can't stand these snakes. Can you help me get these snakes off the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier? And so that's one of your side quests, is to go around and get the snakes.
Wow.
Which I think is just as delightful.
That's pretty great.
So we had a really good time playing that. I guess I don't have a great answer to that. We've also played the Batman, a couple of the Batman ones on the Xbox, and those have been pretty good, but are, you know, I mean, they're good, but they're, you know, they're much more Rock'em Sock'em robot stuff.
Well, I actually was gonna pick one of the Arkham games.
Okay.
And I think I can't decide between Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. And I know Guy's going to listen to this and be like groaning because, yeah, I'm sure he has opinions.
I'm sure he does. We'll hear them next week.
I really like both of those games. For one thing, I feel like it does have the best. It feels like Batman, like really feels like you're playing Batman with the combat system. I think it's really well done. The earlier ones, I think, are better because they have a little bit more. The scope is a little bit more manageable. And the third one, you need to get like the Batmobile involved because it's just the map gets so huge. Just getting anywhere is a pain. So like, I kind of like the claustrophobic nature of Arkham Asylum, especially. But there are some truly fantastic. I mean, for one thing, it has Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill. That's the in and of itself. Great. The character designs are really good. The plots are pretty good for the most part for video games. And there's some truly standout pieces of level design in there. I'm thinking in particular of the Scarecrow levels in both Arkham Asylum. I think there's one Arkham City too, where it starts really screwing with like what you're actually seeing, and how the gameplay works and stuff like that. And it's very trippy in a way that only really a game I think can do very well. Mm-hmm. And so I really like that a lot. I beat all four if you count Arkham Origins, which is not good. That one was done by like off brand. I think Warner Brothers did it itself instead of can't remember the name of the production house, but that one's just it's poor. It's not really well thought out. Yeah. But the first two are particularly good. My biggest complaint with any of them is that you the Riddler trophies, which are fun but clever, but just there's too many of them, and they're too. I beat all those games like 100% completion, I think, except for the Riddler trophies. And it's so annoying and galling. It's like there's like 300 of these, and they all require like specific different tricks. And like no. I would do some of them, and then I would just get frustrated, and I'd be like, I'll go back to these later. And then later on, like the last one, literally there is a different ending once you've gotten to 100% completion.
Oh,
and the
really?
Only thing I didn't have was the stupid Riddler trophies. And I was like, I'll come back to it. And eventually I was like, nope, I'm going to go watch it on YouTube because I'm never going to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't have that level of need to complete. Like I like to complete the main task, you know, defeat whoever you need to defeat. But I complete a lot of the side quests, but I don't complete the entire. I can't think of one that I've completed like an entire game of.
In that regard, I definitely get very much into that. Like, oh man, I need to do the whole thing. I get that completionist streak.
Yeah,
which sometimes
I'm still playing.
Breath
of the Wild is the one where I am going through. Like I'm slowly going back, and I mean, having completed the main, you know, the main job, I'm going back and trying to do all the side quests.
That's the one I haven't even finished it. I got like bogged down in my need to complete things, and that was like okay. That really didn't do me any favors there. All right, we answered that question. Listener Daniel actually sent several questions for when we have like sort of down moments. So he's also asking if any of us are following any current comic runs.
I'm currently not. I dropped my Marvel Unlimited subscription, mostly because I'm not happy with some of the Marvel management. but the other thing was I was noticing that I was reading so many, because it's everything, I was reading so many comic books that I was not reading books anymore, and I thought that was not a good thing, particularly because a lot of the regular Marvel runs are just they're not the cutting edge of like comic book creativity, let's put it that way. It's a lot of, I think what's currently going on with the X-Men is pretty interesting. I don't seem as into it. I read a couple of them before. I kind of gave up on buying those comic books, but I wasn't quite as into it as it seems like a lot of other people are. But I thought it was good, and I thought it was it was nice that they were mixing it up a little bit. They were like starting all over, sort of. I mean, not starting over from the beginning, but they were
rebooting
everything, basically. Yeah, all the lines, all the comic books, because that the X-Men was like the big problem. Really, was the one that I was reading. I was like reading most of the X-Men books, and I was just like, I don't even remember what's going. You know, like I don't remember. I couldn't tell you what was happening in those books before I finally stopped reading them. And I think if that's happening, then I'm not really getting as much out of them as I should. So currently, I don't know. I was enjoying Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man because it was sort of a throwback, like, you know, like we were talking about. It was like a throwback to him just in the neighborhood helping people out, which was, that was fun. That was really good. And Ms. Marvel, I was enjoying. I think that's probably the one I'm going to miss the most out of the ones that I was reading before and currently am not reading. But the other ones I can't. I honestly, I was Doctor Strange. I always enjoy Doctor Strange, but the other ones I practically can't even tell you what I was reading.
Yeah, I had a very similar, it diverged slightly, but I was a Marvel Unlimited subscriber. I've also dropped my subscription, although it runs through whenever. I bought like a year's worth, so yeah, I've got like a month or two left on it.
So does mine.
But I had, for me, it was the opposite. I had stopped, I'd been really into it for a while, and then I kind of dwindled, my interest had dwindled. And in part, it was because I was frustrated with the app, and it never quite worked the way I wanted it to.
Right.
Like I really just wanted to be like, I want to follow these 8 comics. Just tell me when there's a new issue and I will go read it right now. And it wouldn't do that. So I'd have to remember to check and I just forgot. And then stuff gets so intertwined and they reboot everything. And so I think I had a lot of frustration with that. Like trying to follow stuff was just difficult. And so I would tend to read runs when people recommended them.
Well, and that's the thing. That's the thing that I think I will continue to do is just be more targeted about what I'm buying. And when I hear people say, oh my God, you gotta read this one, then I'll read that. Plus there's a lot of old stuff that I haven't really caught up on. And from both Marvel and DC, like I haven't gotten all the way through, the original, well, not the original, but the Alan Moore Swamp Thing.
Yeah. I had mainly been reading, I'd been reading Captain Marvel. I'd been reading Ms. Marvel. I've been reading Squirrel Girl, as I mentioned, Hellcat. I've been reading that. I think I just in general liked a lot of the books with the female protagonists. They tended to be more interesting, and that was more where it felt like the cutting edge was.
Yeah, I agree.
I was a huge X-Men fan. Like that was the X-Men was the comic I bought when I was a teenager and like buying comics, but like I just can't keep track. There's too many characters and too much like history. Yeah. It's just, I find it frustrating. I really liked those Doctor Strange, Jason Aaron's.
Yeah. With female protagonists, X-23 is another one in that line that I think was really good.
I'd never read much of that. I really liked Jason Aaron's Doctor Strange run. And I liked some of the, I did like the Moon Knight run that was going. I mentioned that last week. There was a Warren Ellis one that was like 6 issues that was just super trippy. And then the, I think, Cullen Bunn run that came after that was very, it was different, but it was still really interesting. And so, you know, like that. Like and for me also, there were a bunch of Star Wars comics that I would read because Marvel had licensed that. And I liked some of those better than others. I will say the Lando miniseries that they did, it's like a 6-issue miniseries, is really good. I think that might be one of my favorite Star Wars-related comics of all time. There's like, but right now I'm not really reading anything. I feel guilty about even just non-superhero stuff. I'd read a lot of the first several volumes of Saga, which I really loved. And then I think there was a big gap at one point, and so I sort of dropped off and I hadn't got back into it. And I just like, I need to get back into that and read a bunch of it. Cause I think they just did a whole hardcover collection or something. So I tend to read occasionally stuff, and then usually Tony Sindelar will be like, you have to read this, and he'll hand me like a stack of comics, and it's like, great, all right, that's easy. At the moment,
you need a source.
That's right, you need someone
to review for you,
a curator.
There you go.
I think that's important. So that's, sounds like we're not reading a lot again. Probably Guy groaning somewhere thinking that he could be telling us about all the great comic books that we're missing out on.
Then he should have been here.
He should have been here. That's all there is. That's all there is. Anything else that we should talk about before we're wrapping up here?
Not that I know of.
We're not going to go an hour today because we don't need to.
We're just going to go 54 minutes.
Yeah. That shows shows restraint, I think, is my point.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, all right. Excellent. We will be back next week. We'll hopefully be back at full strength again. I have no idea what we'll talk about because there is, like I said, not a lot of shows on right now. The Arrow, when does Arrow premiere? I guess that's the real question. I think it's at the beginning of October.
That's what I would guess, but...
15th.
Okay.
So it's still like 6 weeks off.
Yep.
We'll have to find something, or we might take a couple of weeks off. You know, we don't have to be here every week. Yeah. But if you do have your letters, of course, send them in. You can send them to biff@theincomparable.com, or you can hit us up at biffcast on Twitter. Or I guess you can just, you know, randomly assail any
fax machine.
Yeah. Send in the faxes. It's on. I checked it. It's all good. but yes, until then, I will just thank you for being here, John Maltz.
Dan, you know we have a sign-off now, right?
I've been told this. I'm trying not to make it a thing.
I sensed that. That's why I was bringing it up.
Well, I'll let you do the honors. Until next week.
Take a puff and call it a night.